Good day, everybody. Welcome to the Jacobson's Market Intelligence Report. Hope everybody had a good week and everyone is safe and sound. Jumping into things, this past week we had a few developments worth noting. There's been quite a bit of questions and talk from our subscribers around a lot of these projects we've been talking about and some of the large global refiners' commitments coming through the COVID pandemic in relation to the low carbon fuel ambitions that were being announced, especially out of the beginning of the gates in 2020 in the January, February, in the months leading up to the pandemic setting in. So this week, Total came out and talked about a 2050 goal of being carbon neutral. So that's following up on sort of Shell's announcement last. And so I think that was an indicator of things in that question. Perhaps as interesting this past week was GPRE also had some compelling ideas looking forward around how things may play out in this US market. Obviously being ethanol producers and a lot of that market sidelined at the moment. They brought up two interesting points as everybody begins to try to absorb the amount of data that's coming in and look ahead and begin to forecast the ramp out of this. GPRE brought up two really interesting things. The first being that effectively they were suggesting a reduction in mass transportation, trains, buses would likely occur across the coming year, resulting in more people commuting in their own vehicles, and thus might be a slight uptick to that gasoline ethanol story that isn't as obvious. And the second piece was certainly that makes sense that with less inclination towards air travel, a lot less people would be vacationing using air travel and would be driving this year. So two interesting points, I think, this past week. But let's jump into the specifics here. And then this week, I'd like to start off with Ryan to get right into the low CI feedstocks and I think tallow.
Thanks, John. I think sidelined is a key word that keeps popping up over the weeks. And that's what we're focused on this week, looking at tallow, is who is sidelined more, the buyers or the sellers? As everybody has seen in the headline news, pork and beef plants are idled due to COVID cases amongst the workers, including USDA inspectors. And so there's a significant tightening of supply, not just in the tallow market, but the overall animal fats market. Demand destruction is significant as well, and the two seem to be fairly well balanced at the moment, hence the steady pricing and why we're calling for steady prices here in the near term. Long term, prices are going to come down, or they're should come down, basis the continued slow demand as well as high relative prices. And presently, we're seeing near record high prices for BFT and technical tallow to soybean oil, to corn, and to palm oil. And it's just a matter of logistics and how long it's going to take those buyers to get those products into their formulations. Chemical demand represents about half of the total inedible tallow demand, and they're running pretty strong right now. So that is also keeping the market supported near term, but I think we'll start to see palm filter into that sector in the not too distant future, which is going to move prices lower. Additionally, RBD soybean oil at sub 30 cents delivered should cap the technical tallow market at most 33 cents delivered. We're about 5 cents over that right now. Additionally, corn, it's trading around 317 a bushel today. That gives Chicago BFT a implied value around 25 and a half cents. I think, again, the limited supply is going to keep that number elevated, but it gives you some indication of where prices are apt to go in the not too distant future, probably more in the June, July window as we see production pick up for the summer. And with that, I'll kick it back to you, John.
Excellent. Yeah, and I think we're going to start to see, certainly, you bring up a great point with that soy to tallow as we're seeing soy start to move in more aggressively into the renewable diesel production profile. It's really an economics, right? You need to look at that CI differential. You need to look at that flat price differential. But it's not so far off as it once was, that's for certain. So, Tori, with a bit more into the soybean oil and virgin veg oils, can we head over to you, please?
Sure. Thanks, John. So today we're going to talk a little bit about palm oil and the spread between palm oil and soybean oil. Palm oil prices on Monday dropped about 5%, playing a little bit of catch up to the fall that we saw on Friday in soybean oil while the Malaysian palm oil market was closed. The drop set a new fresh life of contract low for the most actively traded July contract. And left the most actively traded continuous contract at the lowest level it's been since July 22 and below the psychologically critical 2000 ringgit level. Going forward, I think if you just looked at the fundamentals, you might expect that palm oil prices would continue to move lower. And in fact, unlike a lot of the markets, palm oil has never really bounced and is in fact obviously lower than it was following the sharp sell-off that pretty much every market went through due to the coronavirus. But we expect that palm oil prices will move higher. And there's a couple reasons for that. First, to talk about why you might expect it to continue to go lower. If you look at palm oil production, it's very seasonal, and we're heading into the time of the year when palm oil production usually picks up. Earlier in the year, palm oil production was hampered by the impact of a drought last year. But as we've talked about before, the best way to get fruit plants to produce fruit is to stress them and then give them good conditions. And as you can see in the production chart, there is a sharp jump in output, average daily output from March to April, and then output continues to rise through the end of the year. And that's going to build stocks from about 2.5 million tons at the end of July. We expect to about 3 million tons by the end of the marketing year. So that's the case for why prices should move lower. Why they should move higher and why we're forecasting them to move higher is really a combination of two things. One, if you look back and look at every time palm oil's dropped below 2,000 ringgit, it's traded below that level six times in the last 10 years. And each time that it's done that, if you look at the month after it's dropped below that level, so we're talking now about June, the market has rebounded back above 2,100 ringgit. So just from a market mechanics standpoint, that level is kind of the demarcation line, and prices don't like to be below that for too long. The only real exception to this pattern was in 2008 when prices traded down substantially below 2000 and set a low just above 1500 ringgit. And it took the market 6 months to recover, but it still came back and traded above 2100 after that period was over. So just from that perspective, it would seem like prices probably will move higher. The other and probably more important reason that we're expecting prices to move higher is the spread between soybean oil and palm oil has started to move back towards soybean oil premium. Prices traded down to parity as recently as April, but they have moved sharply higher over the last several weeks as soybean oil has started to recover from the coronavirus lows, and palm oil has continued to move lower, and the spread has gotten out to about 4 cents. Now, the spread could come back a little bit if next week the Malaysian Palm Oil Board reports lower than expected production and lower than expected stocks. But because of that seasonal trend in production, we expect that the spread will continue to widen. And at some point, soybean oil, the higher that it moves, it will just drag palm oil along with it. At 4 cents, we're not really at that area yet, but as we move up to 5 and 6 cents, we think that the movements in soybean oil will start to have a larger impact on palm oil, and we expect the prices to get up to 5 or 6 cents in the coming months. With that, I'll send it back to you, John.
Thanks a lot, Tori. And that spread's obviously such an interesting one to watch for sort of the global temperature of things. And it's going to continue to be an interesting one across this year, clearly. Jumping into the biomass-based diesel lens to the feedstock worlds, let's take a look, George, if we can, over at the BOHO spread and get into the biomass-based diesel space a little bit. So this past week, the HOBO spread came off a little bit, actually a good bit. We saw that heating oil move from last week, that huge drop, recover a bit. I think we have about an 89-cent heating oil market now heading into the webinar today. And so effectively with the BOHO being reduced, again, that takes some pressure off of the biomass-based diesel production structure. So that ag input to energy output, that spread gets lowered, that takes pressure off of the overall structure to produce a potential gallon of renewable diesel or biodiesel, and takes pressure off of things like the RINs and the credits to make this all work. So that's retreating and coming back towards both renewable diesel and biodiesel producers. The next key piece of this structure is the D4 RIN. If we can jump over there, we'll see the D4 RIN actually maintained and gained about 2 cents. We were anticipating that BOHO move that sort of transpired, and were a bit more bearish RINs this past week. They actually gained a penny or two. We'll often see that sort of latent reaction to the spread structurally, where the RINs takes a few days to catch up with what's happened there. So perhaps that's what's gone on there. But in general with the RINs, we remain bearish. We see there could be some additional room on the sort of BOHO move. And so we remain near term a bit bearish to neutral on the D4 moving forward in the coming week. This then feeds into what we've been trying to describe as sort of the overall economics for producers buying feedstocks for forward production. And as we've talked about in the past weeks, even with the BOHO coming off, even with the RINs popping up, George, if we could go over to that gross processing monitor, we'll see that biodiesel production economics sort of prospectively forward, which is important in relation to what's happening in the market today, biodiesel producers buying feedstocks for forward production. You can see the biodiesel economics are still challenged even going into sort of California. Although they've improved, we're not quite seeing those economics green lighted. That's an average, so you're going to have some of the lower cost producers a bit closer, obviously, the vertically integrated. But the story here is really that renewable diesel economics and how that production continues to flow into the California market profitably. And we saw one of the biggest renewable diesel refiners, one of their owners, talk about some of those earnings this past week. And that be highlighted a bit, quite frankly, that renewable diesel positive margin scenario amidst the current market conditions. And Bob, from there, I think we should go over to LCFS and maybe if you wanted to touch a little bit on what you've seen in the biodiesel markets in some of the other regions. But I don't think there's a ton going on. But let's pass it over to Bob Lane from here.
Thanks, John. One thing we have to look forward to currently in Q2 is maybe a downtick in renewable diesel supply coming into California with a producer in Singapore going through a catalyst change during Q2 of this time. We have seen strong activity in the credit market for California. There was, I think last week, 977,000 credits were processed through their system. Of those credits, 82% were type 2 transfers, which are greater than 10 days. So the spot market has not seen a ton of activity. There was probably 176,000 of those credits were within a 10-day or less period of time. Average price of those credits that traded as type 1 transactions, less than 10 days, was $186. So there has been some pressure, which has continued on the LCFS credit. It's expected to probably hold in this level. Anticipation going forward as far as what the electric market may or may not do is going to probably help support prices, but right now we're seeing a bit of pressure due to this pandemic. I think if we're going to look at a little deeper dive into what has gone on in the LCFS market, they had just released their fourth quarter 2019 report. And with that, I might kick it over back over to Tori, who's actually done a bit more of an in-depth analysis on that than I have at this point.
Thanks, Bob. So CARB released the data for the fourth quarter of 2019 last week. Biodiesel production for the quarter totaled 55.5 million gallons. That was down about 1.7 million gallons from the third quarter and from last year. Both of those totaled 57.3 million gallons. And it was 6.2 million gallons below the expected total, if you just look at sort of the average EMTS production for the first quarter versus, or for the fourth quarter versus the LCFS production for the fourth quarter. So a little bit below where you might have expected it, just looking at that relationship. Based on the first quarter EMTS data, we expect CARB to report biodiesel production at 44.6 million gallons when they release their next report at the end of July. Renewable diesel production was 164.8 million gallons. That was 31.6 million gallons above the third quarter and 55.4 million gallons above last year, highlighting the continued growth in renewable diesel production that ends up in California. Again, based on the first quarter EMTS data, we expect CARB to report renewable diesel output for the first quarter at 168.2 million gallons. And with that, I'll send it back to you, John.
Great. And I think, the key thing on that is it appears that it just continues to be a story of the market not quite meeting the forecasts, sort of quarter after quarter, year after year. So, that's although biomass-based diesel, a major heavy hitter, not quite living up to the forecast that CARB's setting out for it. So from there, that's about it for the major segments this week. Let's jump into the questions, George, if we can.
Sure thing. First question we have is really for Ryan. Why isn't oleochemical using more soybean oil?
Really, it just comes down to fatty acid profile, and there's a lot more stearic acid, I believe about five times more. If I'm slightly off there, I hope the chemical engineers don't come after me, but five times more stearic acid and tallow than there is in soybean oil or a lot of vegetable oils. So really, that's what it comes down to, that fatty acid split.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Tori, will soybean oil prices require a continuation of the rally in crude to move higher?
The correlation there has been off and on over the past several weeks, for sure. I think that there's a chance that on any given day, soybean oil move with crude oil, and if crude oil recovers, one, maybe it means that the economy is coming back, and so by definition then soybean oil would come back maybe a little bit more without sort of that causal relationship. What I really think is going to drive soybean oil prices and a recovery in soybean oil prices is the realization of something that we've been talking about, which is these shortages in other vegetable oils and other feedstocks are probably going to provide opportunities for soybean oil usage that the market isn't recognizing yet. And so you probably don't have as large a drop off in overall soybean oil usage as I think the market's pricing in right now. And as the market starts to realize that, I think that you'll get a recovery in that. That may coincide with a recovery in crude oil, or if crude oil takes off and goes back to $60, then obviously that would drag soybean oil prices higher for a variety of reasons. But I don't think that it's a set condition. I think you could have crude oil prices go down and have soybean oil prices continue to move higher.
All right, thank you, Tori. Cusa, can you explain why the Jacobson believes renewable diesel supplies may be uniquely unaffected by this situation?
Yeah, so I think what that's referring to is our statements tracking that we potentially see renewable diesel volumes may not be reduced significantly. And I think that's really an LCFS story, where biodiesel is distributed throughout the U.S., certainly stronger in states that have their own incentives, whether mandates or LCFS. Renewable diesel and its timeline, to some degree, it is pretty much delivered, Bob, 95% into the California and Oregon markets because of the netbacks. And so because renewable diesel is a drop-in fuel and its limited availability, and as important, it's a low CI drop-in fuel. So it's easy to put it into the market, doesn't require segregated tanks, special blending, and all of that type of stuff the way biodiesel and ethanol arguably can. Renewable diesel is a drop-in fuel that sits very low on the cost curve basis CI values within the California program. And thus, it's remaining, as we can see in some of the earnings reports, a very profitable business consistent with our estimation in our gross processing monitor. And thus, the economics of that business suggests that it should continue to be able to buy feedstocks provided they're available. And that's where we talk about that story and potentially emerging into more soybean oil use across the year as some of the traditional low CI feedstocks become more challenging to get. But that overall renewable diesel production, provided feedstock availability is there, we see maintaining.
Okay, thank you, John. Ryan, could you speak to the impact of euthanized hogs on the fat market?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's that there's going to be additional fat supplies in the market basis the rendering of these euthanized hogs that had to be cleared to make barn space or maintain barn space for like market weight hogs or hogs that were at risk of being too heavy. But this is a historical, like unprecedented situation. So what the specs are and what the end market uses are for that specific fat, you know, kind of remain to be seen. I think it's going to fall into the broader category of people who aren't too picky on what they need because you don't know exactly what the constituent product is going in. You know, is there blood, hair, et cetera, and how does that affect the end product of protein and fat? I think what it'll eventually do is increase the liquidity and maybe accelerate potentially the downturn of feed fat prices. But as far as the premium grades like technical tallow or even BFT, I don't think that it's going to do too much to that in the near term.
Thank you, Ryan. And the last question is for Tori. How might a trade war with China affect veg oil prices?
So there's probably a couple of different answers to that question depending on the market. So in general, I think what we've seen last fall was that the trade war between the U.S. and China tended to support palm oil prices. And that may be part of the reason why the spread had gotten so narrow, not this spring, but certainly last year, because the fewer soybeans that you have going into to China, the less soybean oil you produce, and the more palm oil that they have tended to import. And so I guess I would say it would be positive for palm oil prices. For soybean oil prices, it's a little bit trickier. China doesn't import soybean oil from the U.S., so there's not necessarily a direct impact from an increase in tensions, but from the perspective that an increase in tensions probably triggers selling in soybeans, that tends to have an impact on the rest of the soy complex and would probably pressure prices a little bit. Given the level that we're at, I'm not sure how much more you could pressure soybean oil. And if we're right in this idea that the market hasn't really recognized how much soybean oil is going to be used over the balance of the year, you could have a situation where the oil share continues to move higher because meal and soybeans are moving down in response to the trade tensions. But in general, I would say that it probably pressures soybean oil prices a little bit.
Okay, thank you, Tori. And that's the end of the questions. Cusick, back to you.
Okay, well, I think that's it for the week. Ryan, I think as you were speaking, I was drifting off thinking about the question of the correlation of no baseball games on choice weight grease supplies this summer. So maybe I'll throw that in for next week. But would just like to say thanks to everybody for joining us, and hope you have a safe and good week. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.